Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm Pat Sloan, and I am super excited to have Victoria Finley Wolf back with me today. We haven't talked for a little bit, and so we're going to catch up on all the new things she's doing. And I'm really excited because she is featured in American Patchwork's April 2016 issue. So you get to see a lot about her home and her studio space. Hi, Victoria. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Pat. Nice to catch up.
Their article is so great. You look like you were having a lot of fun.
Oh, my gosh. We were having a blast. We were getting a little bit carried away on where else could we take photos?
Yeah.
Taxis and Statue of Liberty. And yeah, we started to get carried away.
Yeah. And you're up on your roof, right, in the one picture?
Yep. We went up on the roof to try to get some skyline shots, and that was kind of nice. That made it kind of easy. But we had a lot of fun with playing with designing quilts. The article kind of came up because of my book, The Double Wedding Ring, Traditions Made Modern book, where I was kind of showing how one quilt can lead to another idea and then another idea, and then all of a sudden you have a whole bunch of quilts. Well, at least that's the way I work anyway. But that's what we wanted to show in the magazine, is they wanted to give me a starter shape, which was one of my template sets, the Stretch X and Tumblr, and start playing with that and then see where it could lead. And then, you know, just by playing with those few shapes, now I have three more quilts. So, you know, that's how things roll around here.
I know. You always have about 20 quilts going on at once, and you finish them. Yeah, so it's not like they're just hanging out. You have a lot of space to design. So, you know, tell me how you go. I think it's fascinating. People can look in the issue and see the photo step outs of you moving through the process. But tell me a little bit just how you get started to work on a new design.
Sometimes it's a shape. Sometimes it's a color. Sometimes it's a traditional quilt. Oftentimes it's a traditional quilt. But looking at those sort of basic shapes and then going, now what am I going to fill that with? So then it's figuring out scrap quilts are kind of my thing, because that way I can incorporate, you know, 50 million colors in one quilt. And then it's putting those things up on the wall. And then, you know, looking for something that's going to grab my eye, something that's going to tell me, oh, that's kind of a neat color palette. Maybe I'm going to go with that color palette. So then I start pulling things off the wall. I like to kind of explain it because I'm trained as a painter. And so when people ask me, do you paint anymore? And I say, well, not really, but I do paint with color, filled with fabric. So if you figure I have a canvas and I have a design wall, on my canvas I can smear in a little red paint, and on my design wall I can put a little red fabric. But if I decide that red needs to come out on the canvas, I can wipe it out, just like I can take the red off my design wall. So I design everything on my design walls. So I'm putting everything up there. I'm taking pictures. I'm moving things around. I'm looking for the things that I like, not what I don't like, focusing on the things that I'm drawn to. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, letting that kind of feed the story. But I design everything out on the wall before I ever start sewing anything.
So the whole piece is pretty much up there before you go to the machine. The machine is just like the mechanics.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, everything's got to be worked out on my walls immediately before I can ever sew anything together, because I might change, or decide that yellow needs to live in a different corner, or, you know.
You also
not to say that doesn't happen even when I am sewing it together, either by accident or by pure mistake, maybe. But, you know, but that's all part of it. That's all part of the fun of playing and making and just having a good time designing quilts.
But you also work pretty quickly.
I do.
Yeah, you do. And how do you help your students? When you go out and teach, you teach a lot. And so how do you help people move forward when they're sort of the people who would mull stuff up over for days and days?
Yeah. Well, I touched on that just briefly when I was just mentioning about focusing on what I like. I find that when I go in to teach a class, people are very quick to say, oh, I don't like that color. I don't use gold. I don't use brown. Or I don't like that pattern. Or I don't like, right? We can always come up with the things that we don't like. But if I try to get them to focus on the things that they like, whether it's one, two, or three colors, or three prints, or, you know, something like that, to always keep coming back to those three things that you like, that helps people move forward, because as long as they have a base to go, okay, that was where I started from, that was what I liked about it, that's what I'm going to keep building on, everything else kind of starts falling to the side. So that's just a good little trick for working quickly, is just, you know, because we can get very, it's like a spiral, you know, mm-hmm. right? Focusing on the negative things, it's a spiral. So if right. you kind of change your thinking and try to focus on the things that you like, it makes you move faster quickly. You're not worrying so much about making a mistake, because you're focusing on something that you're enjoying and that you like.
Right. And it makes the whole thing more positive. Then you're always...
Absolutely. The whole experience yeah. should be a positive one. Yeah. It should be enjoyable. So if you're just sitting there curmudgeoning over some ugly burgundy red or something that you have in the quilt, yeah. then take it out and get rid of it and put in yeah. a bright happy red and move on right. with your life.
Now, tell me very, very briefly, because I asked you this in advance. You did a quilt with some of your rings for that had a tractor. I was called a theme, but it doesn't look like a tractor theme until you look smack in the middle. How did that happen?
That was one of those things. I grew up on a farm in Minnesota. We were international harvester people. Everything, and my dad is also a motorhead, so everything had to be, like, clean. The tractors were clean. Everything was perfect. So we had red tractors. We had a red front door. We had red furniture. Everything was red because everything was used up with International Harvester red. Yeah. So I always thought, well, someday I'm going to have to make that quilt. And I was in a quilt shop, and I, all these years later, and I looked down and I saw all these beautiful linens that reminded me actually of the Oshkosh Gosh overalls, the little pinstripe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fabrics that we had, and I was like, oh God, I know how to make that tractor quilt now. So I went home, and actually I was in Missouri with my friends, and I cut out that double wedding ring quilt, and then thought, this has got to be the tractor quilt. So then it was just the theme of putting the International Harvester logo in it, putting the tractor tires around the outside of it. I mean, sometimes, you know, just old memories from a long ago, that just finding one fabric sparked mm-hmm. a whole quilt. So yeah, you just never know when inspiration is going to knock you over the head.
And I love that you share a lot of that. I mean, there's a lot that is just impossible to document, but it's great if people come out to your website, to your blog, bumblebeansinc.blogspot.com, and they can just see what you're doing, because you are a great sharer of things. I appreciate that. That's how I met you.
Well, that's also part of the process, though, too. Yeah. Sometimes it's not just about picking colors. It's all that other stuff that you think about that's going into the quilt. And sometimes that quilt is a story, and that's mm-hmm. part of the process. But I love that. I think quilts should have a story. So yeah. I have other quilts that I just make because I just have to make them. Mm-hmm. I kind of call them nothing quilts, but they're not nothing quilts, but they don't have the guts to them.
Right, right.
And I like them to have some guts. It. I think that makes it interesting.
Yeah, and it powers your creativity, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Because it's like a springboard. It leads to yet another idea or another memory, you know, mm-hmm. happy memory that leads you to making yet another quilt. Because that's yeah. just a happy place to be.
Well, I want to touch on two other things while I have you here, because I know you have like suitcases open because you came from Antarctica and you're going to Australia. You're a busy, busy traveler at this time. Tell me first how you got, just brief, how did you start using dyes and templates, and did you always use them, or is that kind of new?
I've used them for quite a while. I'm kind of obsessed with quilt patterns that do multiples of the same kind of a block, and my die cuts are really good for that. Mm-hmm. And also, from teaching so much, I find that people are having a hard time cutting, and so the die cuts, you know, when I'm designing a die, I'm trying to find things that are not the most fun to cut out, like if you need a wedding ring or bow ties or things that have some interesting shapes to it. I just find it's just another tool for me to get a lot done. So, you know, using my Sizzix dies to be able to do that has been a really fun a journey to explore and find what is a really great thing that needs to be cut out with a die cut. Plus, they're going to be cut perfectly for you. So, you know.
I know. It's so cool. I've never really explored that, Victoria. And I was, you know, just sort of thinking about it when we were going to talk. And I thought, you know, that's a tool that I need to sort of play with at some point. Because you actually take them to your classes so people can try them and, you know, use them.
Absolutely.
Actually use them. Yeah.
So they get a chance to see how it works. You know, you can cut 8 layers at a time. You get lots of pieces cut out. You can lay your scraps on there and get, you know, great for scrap quilts. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I just find it, it's just, you know, I like gadgets, I like tools, and that helps me get more done. I can get a lot done by cranking out those pieces.
I have to come up sometime and just have you show me how you play with them, because it's just they're just sort of like, for me, they're a mystery. I haven't explored them at all. So
we'll get you addicted.
Yeah.
Come on up. I can do that.
You can do that. You're good. Okay, so tell me, the other thing is your absolutely gorgeous fabric is out in the stores, right?
Yes, it came out in January. Meadows, oh my gosh, Mostly Manor.
Yes, Mostly Manor.
I almost got it out of the bag. The second one, Meadow Storm, coming out in August.
Ooh, we got secrets. Yeah, so what's the, just tell me real quickly, what is the story behind your fabric?
You know, everything I do is based on my grandmother, really. She's what inspired the quilts that I do. So the fabric line is, it's actually named after people in my family. So Elda is my grandmother and Leo is my grandfather. And it's about where they lived and where they grew up and just the happy memories of things. Mostly Manor is actually, you know, mostly prints that you would find if you walk through their house. You know, how most of our grandparents' houses have a wide span of time, of decades, possibly. So, like my grandparents from the 30s all the way through to the 80s, you find these various types of prints. And this is really how I make quilts. So, it's using lots of different eras, lots of different kinds of color palettes, and, you know, putting it all together in one line. So, that's Mostly Manor.
It's just gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
I know.
That's been a really fun thing to do with Marcus Fabrics. I've been having a great time, and I'm really looking forward to Meadow Storm being out in August also. Again, gardening, Minnesota weather, does it get any better? That's the next inspiration. So,
yeah.
It's good to know where you come from. See, tractors, gardening, living in the Big Apple. You know, it's a good creative contradiction.
Well, Victoria, thank you so much for being here and being able to share. And I'll go tell everybody to go to your website,
VFWQuilts.com.
We'll see you later.
Thanks.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or many more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcase. Quilt along with us in 2016. Join our third annual quilt along by making a quilt, a one block pillow, or all four projects featuring plus sign designs. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/quiltalong for a list of participating bloggers and designers, and to see photos of what staff members and other readers are sewing. Share your photos on social media using the hashtag APQQuiltalong to join the fun.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I want to tell you that you know, sometimes I see something and I'm like, that's just like the catalyst. I'm like, oh, I got to meet this person. I got to find out what they're doing. They're doing something really neat. And Amy Johnson's show on her class, rather, on Craftsy was one that got me intrigued. She does a free motion quilting class where it says, use rulers. Well, I do a lot of free motion quilting, but not with rulers. So I'm like, what's this all about? So Amy is so nice. She agreed to come on here and tell us all about it. And I am really, really excited. Thanks for being here, Amy.
Well, thanks for having me, Pat.
So your website is called Free Motion Quilting Adventures. Yay!
Yep.
tell me, how did you get into quilt making?
I think I read too much Little House on the Prairie as a child. And I really got really interested in a lot of the things that my mom, who was a modern woman by those standards, mm-hmm. Wasn't into. Maybe it was my way of rebelling by going domestic. I don't know. But I loved gardening. I loved sewing. She taught me, I'm very thankful, she taught me how to use her old Singer sewing machine and then promptly stopped sewing, and I just kind of ran with it. And I did a little quilting off and on, and probably more off until I had children. And then I needed something that stayed done.
Mm-hmm.
So cooking, cleaning, all that stuff. That never stayed done, but stitching did.
And, That's an interesting way to think about it. You needed something to complete, that you didn't have to do it again.
Yes.
So let's talk about this class. How did, first of all, describe what the class is with, you know, free motion quilting. We're talking about our sit down machines, the kind
That's
everybody
right.
has in their studio or their kitchen table, you know, so what is it about?
Well, it's about using rulers to guide your free motion quilting. It's still a basic free motion quilting technique at its heart, mm-hmm. but it's adapting how long armers use rulers with their machines. And instead of running our machine along the edge of the ruler, we are moving the ruler with our hand along the foot of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a link when I first started machine quilting, that referenced a particular message board, and it was mostly all long-arm quilters. It said it was for machine quilters, but they were mainly long-arm quilters.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the work they did, but I knew I couldn't ever have a long arm. Mm-hmm. I have a little house. I had little kids. I had a very mm-hmm. little budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that wasn't going to happen, but I loved the work that they did. And I was at the Hampton Roads show in Virginia one day, and I saw this foot that looked a lot like their ruler foot.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I think that'll fit on my machine.
Oh.
And so I put it on there, and I just started fiddling with it. And the next thing you know, I'm sharing it on my blog and using these different rulers and just having a blast.
So are you a gadget girl? Are you one that just loves gadgets normally, or is this sort of outside your
norm? No, this is outside the box for me. maybe I'm a quilting cheapskate, if you can be one of those. It's not conducive to being a cheapskate when you're quilting. No. But I don't like a lot of gadgets. Again, small house, small budget. But the rulers allowed me to be really free with my free motion, but mm-hmm. still give things some structure mm-hmm. without having to do math or measuring or a lot of marking. So those are kind of my weaknesses when it comes to quilting is math, measuring, and marking. And the rulers let me kind of have that look to my work without mm-hmm. having to do those things.
Well, I'm very intrigued. You know, I haven't taken the class yet, but it's very, you know, I think anybody who quilts their own quilts, it's intriguing to learn about something that might give you, you know, a little bit more precision, maybe. That would be the way to say it.
Yeah.
So when you're doing this, if you're not so we have the regular feet on our machines. You mentioned that you saw a foot that so we would have to have a different foot. Can you explain why?
Yeah, you have to have a special ruler foot to work with rulers, or at least to work with them safely. I have seen people try to use a regular free motion foot, but I don't recommend it because what can happen is the ruler can slip over or under a regular free motion foot. That needle's going to hit it, and it can hit it hard enough it can throw your whole machine out of time. So this special foot has a real high lip all the way around it, and it's perfectly circular. So wherever you put your ruler, it's going to be 1/4 of an inch away from the needle, and that allows you to get precise spacing when you use the lines on the marking lines on a ruler, say for cross hatching. Again, you don't have to measure, you can just line up the marks, and that keeps your ruler where it needs to be, keeps it spaced evenly, and so far we've been able to fit them on just about any regular sewing machine. And then, of course, the new sit-down long arms almost all have some sort of a ruler foot.
Oh, okay. So even with those, because I know I have a Tierra here, and so, you know, one half of my – I have an open-toe foot on it, so I would need to have a closed toe and get one that's got the whole length all the way around, that thicker
–
Yeah. So is it easy to, you know, I think you, do you sell those feet now yourself? Are they easy to get, or are they a little bit specialized?
Well, I sell them now. I think they're relatively easy to get. It seems everybody kind of wants that personal touch and wants someone to tell them exactly what foot they need on their machine and which version, because the feet that are available come in a couple of different versions. So a lot of people need help identifying you know, what kind of shank do they have on their machine and therefore what kind of version. But once you know what shank you have on your machine, you just order the version that'll fit on there. And so it's been really, really neat.
And then the rulers themselves do, I know with, you know, the world of long armors, their rulers are thicker than what we are using it, to cut fabric and things like that. Do you also need thicker rulers for this?
Well, that's a complicated question.
Sorry.
I talk about it on my blog quite a bit. You can use the thicker rulers with any domestic machine, but you may not be able to use them all the way around your machine. Specifically, a low shank machine doesn't have enough clearance behind the foot for a big, thick ruler. And so now there's another company that's on the market. They sell ruler feet and rulers, and they've started making some thinner rulers. And those do help. I think you lose a little bit of the grippability of a nice thick ruler. They feel really nice in your hand. But we've got thinner rulers out there, and that's great if you have a low shank machine so you can really use it on your sewing machine with good results.
Okay, so now I have to – I'm really, really curious, Amy, because, you know, I push fabric, and I – I'm trying to visualize holding this ruler. I mean, does it have grippers on the bottom? You know, how do I get that whole thing going? Because now I have to add another item to the game, or does it really just become part of my hand?
For me, it becomes part of my hand. There are different things you can put on the bottom of the ruler that help. I will tell you that most of my students say that it's easier to do than they ever thought it would be.
Oh, wow.
So it sounds harder than it actually is. My primary method is, well, one, I do use some little silicone gripper dots on the bottom of my ruler, just like you might use on a cutting ruler, and that helps a little bit. But I always wear quilting gloves, and so I make sure to kind of nestle the ruler in such a way that the tips of my quilting gloves are kind of off the edge of the ruler. And so I've got it kind of locked into position with my hand, and I don't have to push down hard to keep it in place.
Okay. Yeah, that's the part I was thinking, you know, do I have to, you know, I don't want to have like the grip of death, you know, to
keep it in place. In fact, the grip of death tends to cause it to slip more than if you just kind of have it locked in with your fingertips and using lighter pressure.
Yeah. So now on your website, you have a tab called Quilting with Rulers, which is very nice of you to do. You have a lot of super tips on there. What is one of the first things, what is like the top thing somebody should start with, like a design or whatever, so they could be successful?
Well, the first thing is, of course, to have that ruler. or the ruler foot. And then the first thing I think is to get a straight ruler and just a basic curve and play with it. Mm-hmm. And just keep playing with it till it feels comfortable. You can get an amazing assortment of designs just from a straight ruler and a basic curved ruler.
Okay. And when you say curved, what does that look like? Is it like a circle or is it sort of an arch?
It's more of an arch, yeah. Okay. Yeah, circles, when they get a tight curve to them, they can be a little more tricky. Okay. So it's just a soft, gentle curve. And it doesn't have to be a completely circular ruler. It's usually just mm-hmm. like a segment of that curve.
Uh-huh. Well, this is just so cool. I'm going to have to get all these things now and try it. and take your class. Tell me, what are you stitching right now? What is your project? We have about a minute.
Well, I am kind of in that post-creative slump. I just got back from Craftsy, and so I'm kind of trying to figure out what I'm going to stitch next. They have some of my quilts still. I'm waiting for those to come back. Mm-hmm. But the next actual quilt that I'm working on is actually one for my daughter. Because, like the cobbler's children who have no shoes, she has no quilt on her bed, and she deserves one. So I've got some beautiful tulle pink fabric, and my daughter and I watched the tulle pink special together on the internet that she did, and ordered her up some fabric. So we're going to just make her a nice, simple little quilt to put on her bed.
And how old is your daughter?
She's 9.
Oh. Yeah. Does she sew?
She does, and she crochets, and she's very crafty. I don't know where she gets it.
That is so adorable. Has she wanted to free motion at all?
Yeah, I think she's not quite ready yet. She still sews by using one of those start-stop buttons on the machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she doesn't quite have that hand-eye coordination yet. So I want to keep it so that she's got the ability before she gets frustrated.
Well, Amy, thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me for a fun video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Luck. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project with me. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for the price of one. That's a full year free. Every issue is packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, detailed photography, complete materials lists, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today at allpeoplequilt.com.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I wanted to tell you that Moda is the sponsor for the show, and they have, I just saw the new guide came out that goes to the shop owners, and I get one. And so I saw that there are 4 new of those cute little tins that they're doing, the frivols that have a pattern and a kit. So they're a kit in a tin, and the tins are amazing. So there's 4 new ones coming out and a new pre-cut size called a Moda Treat. So I have to find out about that. So you hear it here first. So the second half of the show, I have got Lisa Bonjay on, and we are going to go deep dive into a bunch of different topics. A lot of them have to do with fabric and small things and wool and flannel and whatever else we can think up. So, Lisa, I am so glad you're here. Thanks.
Hey, Pat, how are you doing?
I am really good. You have snow today by any chance where you are?
We had some flurries, but nothing that's staying, thank God.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's April. You know, excuse me, April. Right. We're not.
It's 30 degrees here and just blustery and yucky. We need some spring weather.
Yes, yeah. And you actually have been going through a move. You have like a new house, right?
Yes, yes. Actually, I'm at my new house right now looking at my view as you talked about the weather. I have a wonderful studio with beautiful views of the lake, and it's just amazing. I have to pinch myself that this house is actually mine. So we're super excited, Nick and I are.
Now, you have some pictures of your new place on your website, on your blog, which is lisabongean.com, and your company is Primitive Gathering. So there, you know, people can find you either way and go check that out. So why don't we talk fabric first? Because we can, you know, go into a little bit of, you know, detail about things this afternoon. How many fabric lines have you done now for Moda?
Oh, boy, you didn't tell me I was going to have to answer that.
Oh.
Well, when 10, I moved, I started 20. To gather them all. So I'm missing one fat quarter pack of watermelons, but I think it's 14?
Yeah.
14.
Yeah.
Something like that, give or take. Don't hold me to it.
No, I won't. I can remember when I met you, Lisa.
Yes, you know I that? Remember it, too.
I do. Isn't that funny? That's how our brains work, isn't it? Yeah. So
yeah, isn't it amazing that we're still here doing what we love?
I know. You were just, I was fairly new, and you were sort of just launching yourself. I think you may have even still had a corporate or an office type job when I met you.
Oh, yes, for sure. Yep.
Yeah. And I think you left that fairly soon after, but it's been so great to keep up with you, and now we get to be together more often.
I took your class one time, and I didn't really take the class for the project. I think I took the class just to see what it was like how certain people teach. So that was one of the things that I did early on before becoming a national teacher myself, was to just watch how other people taught. And you were one of them that I remember taking an applique class with. Yes. Yes.
You did. You did. I think you had to leave early because you had to go to work. That's
Yes, that's right. I was on the night shift or something, right?
Yeah. It was like you were there for most of the day, but I can remember because I was still somewhat new to teaching. Uh-huh. So I hadn't really experienced a lot of people leaving early, you know. It was kind of, so it made an impression.
I hope you didn't take that as that was just one of those things that has to happen when you work 12-hour swing shifts. Right. Thank God I don't have to do that anymore.
That's right. That's right. So let's talk. Yeah. I want to talk about first, like flannel and plaids and wovens and some different things like that, because you and I both started out with that being an abundant type of fabric to us. The flannels and plaids and things were really, really popular. We used it a lot, and then it sort of ebbed away. And now, I mean, it's never gone away, but it's not as plentiful. But now it's back, and there's lots more options. Are you mixing your flannels and things with your regular cottons?
I don't mix flannels with the regular cottons, but the homespuns with the regular cottons, yes.
Okay.
So sometimes people get confused when they think if a fabric gets fuzzy that it is a flannel, and that's not necessarily true. We all know that Moda has beautiful brushed cottons, and they are woven. They are not printed like flannel is printed.
Right. So you can...
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Let's explain that a little bit more, because the way I tell people sometimes is if you flip it over, there's like a backside to a flannel, right?
Yeah, if you flip it over, it's definitely a back. If you flip over a homespun, it's still the same print on the other side. It just might not be fuzzy. It could be flat, or it could be fuzzy on both sides. But a homespun is woven, where a flannel is printed like a regular cotton is printed, and it has a definite back.
Right. I mean, I remember, I don't do this now, but I remember needle turning with wovens.
Yes, it was fun to do it, right?
Yeah. Well, some of them
actually turned beautifully.
Yeah, they're you know, just don't do little tiny patchwork with it, but
right.
So are you recommending that the wovens and the flannels be pre-washed and all of that?
With my fabrics, I don't think really any of us have time to pre-wash anymore. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I do with my fabrics before I start any quilt, whether it's flannel, homespun, regular cotton, not wool, but anything that's not wool, I will starch my fabrics. And what I mean by that is I actually saturate them wet, hang them to dry, and then when they are completely dry, then I iron them, stack them, and cut them as I would any other quilt. And the reason why we want to starch is because it creates a nice stiffness and a nice, it's just so much easier to piece, especially tiny, with starched fabric. And it also takes the place of washing because it's shrinking now because you have wet it and dried it, and then everything is shrunk now, and you can piece without having to, while you're making the block, the different fabrics are shrinking differently if you're using a wide variety of fabrics.
Yeah. So I've, you know, because we were talking about this starching stuff recently with the Splendid Sampler, because you're one of our designers, and you had mentioned, oh, you know, wet it and then let it dry. So I've been experimenting with that, but I am not patient, Lisa.
No, you have to think ahead. You have to think, okay, tomorrow I'm going to work with these charm squares. So then you saturate them all and you hang them and you let them dry. And then when tomorrow comes in, you start working with them. But yes, I understand being impatient. But I mean, you can dry them with the iron. They're just not as stiff. The iron soaks some of that or takes some of that stiffness away when you do, when you do iron them dry. But one of the things that I want to mention is I used to never work with pre-cuts as the actual size. So what I mean by that is if I worked with a jelly roll, I would cut it down to 2 inches because I didn't like, I needed to shrink it, right? Mm-hmm. And I never used to use it, but I really just noticed lately that especially the jelly rolls will shrink one direction, which is the length and not the width. So when you shrink, when you saturate and starch those jelly rolls, they are still 2.5 inches. The way that they shrink is the long way. So that way, now I'm starting to use them as a pre-cut and not, you know, to cut them down.
Yeah. Yeah. So it saves time too. Then you don't have to.
Yeah, it does. Yes.
Retrim them all.
And time is our most precious asset.
So right.
That's what I tell everybody. We need to be efficient and use our time wisely.
Yeah. So do you have like a pressing, you know, assistant for all of this starch fabric that you
Yes, I have to admit that's one thing, but one of the things I can easily delegate as a job. And I do have an assistant or two, a college girl and my assistant sometimes who will just come in and saturate and hang fabric.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to admit it.
Well, you also...
It's that important to me.
Right? Well, you also produce a lot of quilts. I mean, you are not only a designer, but you also have the shop, and you have... You are a maker yourself, so I know just like...
I'm not going to give that up. I mean, a lot of people think just because you design that, you know, somebody else makes your quilts.
Yeah.
No, that is not what I came into this business to do. I would rather, you know, give up the accounting and the payrolls and all that other stuff that goes on. I have, you know, shop managers and warehouse managers and kit managers, but I am not going to give up sewing quilts. And if I have to write the directions, you know, I need to make that quilt.
Right, right. And
I at least make the first sample of everything. And sometimes I'll always write the directions and, you know, if we're making several quilts for a fabric line, I'll have, sometimes my assistant will be making one of the quilts, but I'm right there along with it. But I really, really, really am doing a lot of stitching, not 100%, but a good 80% of it, I would say.
Yeah. And I think that that's because that's your enjoyment of it. Otherwise, you could go work in a corporate office, you know?
Right. Yep. It's what I love to do. And when you do this day in and day out, everybody's like, don't you get tired of making quilts? I'm like, no, this is what this is what I wanted to do. This is what everybody aspires to do, quit their job or retire to quilt, right? So.
I know. Well, we had Victoria Findlay Wolf on earlier, and she is the same way. You know, she's just a maker extraordinaire. It's like you live to make, you know, and that's, that's a kind of a common bond, I think, of a lot of us, that it's, you know, making is the fun part.
The directions, not so much, but.
Yeah, the writing directions. I know. I did that in corporate life, but have to do it here too. That's. I want to ask you about your flannel line. Do you have one in the store now, or is it one coming out?
I have one coming out in May, and it's called, all my flannel lines are designed to look like wool, but they're essentially cotton flannel. But I designed them keeping in mind, like, I can put appliques on them, and they will look like a wool quilt instead of, you know, just a cotton quilt, and keep the price down to everything being more economical if it's cotton instead of wool. So I'm on my fourth line like this, and they're called woolen needle flannels. Mm-hmm. So they, like I said, mimic wool, and I have the fourth one coming out, and it's called the Farmer's Son. And I just designed it because I wanted to think about all the men. I have a lot of men in my life, and I think they need some attention too. Everybody always talks about the farmer's daughter, the farmer's wife. Well, what about the farmer's son? So that was my little inspiration for my flannel line. And I have colors like tractor oil gray and barn board, barn boards and little fun stuff like that. Bandana blue.
And you have a new little man in your life, right?
Oh, I do. I can't describe, that being a grandmother, how awesome it is. It just totally, it happened at a perfect time in my life, and I just needed it, and I just had him this last weekend, and it was just so much fun. It totally has changed a lot of my work ethic. I work hard, but yet I make time for him now, and it's my treat.
Yeah, he's adorable. He shows up every so often on your website, I see.
Yes, he does, yes.
Well, that's as it should be.
Right, yes. And I only understand all that grandma stuff now when everybody wanted to show the grandma their pictures.
Yeah. Oh, so I'll get to see that in May. Here, let me show you the kids.
Yes, like, let me see.
Oh, so when you're doing, we have like about 2 minutes until we'll take a break. And I was thinking, what could we fit in here? Oh, we have like a minute. Do you have a special tool that you're working with small patchwork that'll help you?
Well, one of the things that I have recently in the last year have come out with is a creative grid ruler that is all dashed. And they're small. One's a 6-inch and one's a 3x7. And they are based on the fact that every line on the ruler is a dashed line. So you can see your fabric at every point. I mean, I know there's a lot of great rulers out there, but sometimes when you're dealing with small, we need an exact, precise measurement. I don't know if I'm on that side of that line or am I on that side of the line. So the dashed line, along with the 1/8-inch markings, so 3/8 and 5/8 and 7/8, those are all marked now with a, you don't have to guess which line it is. It actually says 3/8 and 7/8. So those things really helped me a lot. And my assistant swears by them. She's like, can you just make some bigger ones now?
Yeah.
She's waiting for those. So
we're going to take a break, Lisa. We'll be right back.
Your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Join American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, giveaways, and more. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos. See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm talking to Lisa Bonejane. So let's talk about wool now. Because you have always used wool. Like, did you start with wool before you started with cotton? I mean, it's like...
It was very soon, yes. I did do some needle turn applique quilts. But then right away, there was a very prominent wool dyer in my area, and I just fell in love with that fiber, the feel, the lushness of that wool. And I just I just wanted to create with it. I didn't care what it was.
Yeah. Well, I think that wool is just, it's just so interesting. It's so the texture of it. It's like to touch it. Are you doing any fusing of wool for your applique?
Yes, I have always fused my wool, and my favorite fusible is Themaseme 2 Light. And the reason why I like it is because the wool and the steam that this fusible requires are best friends. So they work really well together. Some fusibles you can't heat. You heat them for a little bit more than they what they suggest, and it's over. That your appliques aren't sticking. Mm-hmm. So with the Themaseme 2 Light, it the wool loves the steam. Therefore, they are a match made in heaven together.
So
I use it on everything. I don't ever pin or glue my wool. It's always a fusible behind it.
Yeah. And is it a full fusible? Or do you use like the donut method or the cutaway on any of the bigger shapes?
Well, yeah, sometimes when you have multiple layers on. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, if it's only two layers, I'll leave both layers in. Or if it's a really big shape, I'll cut out, if things are laying on top. But that's part of being frugal, too, I think, is, you can use that inside shape to cut the next shape and the next shape and so on. But, yes, I will do some of that when it comes to pennies or things like that. I'll always use the same piece of fusible because the Themaseme 2 is not very cheap. It's a very, decent material or whatever. So it is a little pricey, but it's worth it.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's really good to know because, people who, some people can't do handwork or don't want to do handwork, for stitching
down.
Right,
but everybody can wool applique. So we just fuse it down and stitch around it. And that's what I tell quilters. I'm like, you'll meet somebody, I don't do that wool stuff. I said, well, you give it a try and I bet you any money you'll change your mind.
It is addictive. It is totally addictive.
It is.
So are you finding, just sort of like a tangent on that, are you finding people I think of wool as more like primitive folk art colors, which is a lot of what your color palette is, but you also have branched out and put yours on light creams like grays. Are you finding the wool sort of drifting that way, or is it still staying a little bit in the darker tones?
I think it's going both ways. I mean, look at Sue Spargo. She's got some beautiful, vibrant wools out there with beautiful colors. And we dye a what we call I call it fluorescence, but it is a bright pack of all those, luscious colors.
Yeah.
But I think wool is for everyone. It's just a matter of one, knowing how to use it, and two, just coming up with how you want to use it or what you're using it for. But it's always been a premier fabric, so it's not anything new. So, why not adapt it to the modern quilt?
Yeah.
There you go. That's a new category in modern quilts.
Wool. Okay, we can start a trend. We can get that going.
Right.
All right.
The next big trend.
For this this month at American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine, we're talking about finding our people, finding our tribe, finding those other makers who like to do what we do. And I know that you do a lot with retreats. And I just thought that's where
there's nothing like being together with a bunch of quilters. And when I was young, starting off doing this at 20, 29 years old, there were no 29-year-old quilters. So you have to look for your tribe, and you find them. And once quilting knows no age. So it's fun to hang out with ladies that are 20, 30 years old from listening to their life experiences, and you just learn so much from them. So to me, it's so important to be a part of a group. Everybody wants to belong, and it's just nothing like, you can live way out in the boonies and still find a group on the internet, belong to a Facebook group. I recently, just this last summer when I do the Summer Block of the Week, I started a Facebook group only letting those in who are doing this project. And it's so much fun, and it's still gone on even though that's well over. And everybody's showing their progress and cheering everybody on, and it's amazing. So everybody's got to find someplace to belong, and there are a lot of opportunities out there. You just got to find the one for you.
Yeah, and in the in-person ones, when you find those people, let's say, you know, like online, I've been hosting online groups forever, and I find that those people then want to meet each other in person.
Yes, I see that all the time at the quilt shows. Oh, yes, we just met. We've been friends for, you know, 6 years. And, you know, some of them are even from different countries, and that's amazing.
It's just, it makes me get goosebumps when that happens. I'm like.
Right. And I believe that as long as you're a quilter, no matter where you get placed, no matter if your husband has to move for his job, no matter where you are, if you're a quilter, you find that quilt guild and you have immediate friends. All you have to do is volunteer for something and you're in.
Right. You're gold. You volunteered. Yes. We love you.
Help out with that quilt show.
That's right.
You never know who you're going to inspire.
Are you personally running retreats now, or are you teaching at other
people? I do a few, yes. With the new location, the California store, we are running one there every year. And they have a really nice place there for us to hold about 50 quilters. And then at home here, we do more. I do have a retreat house that quilters visit every week. We do maybe, you know, 4 or 5 retreats there during the year. I have groups that just keep coming back year after year that want me to teach them stuff there. But yeah, I have some big plans in the future to do some more of that and to move the retreat house and the shop and the warehouse all in one location. So I'm super excited about that. So.
Ooh.
That's
you
what's
always,
coming up for me.
you always have great ideas on ways to get people to sew. That's what I'm always thinking.
Yes,
is like,
And
your projects are always so doable, Lisa. You know,
well,
it's not,
and that's one of the things. I mean, even though some of the projects I do, they look like they're very complicated, they look very intricate, or they may be tedious. But nothing that I do is hard. I don't believe anything I do is hard. So therefore, I think I can teach somebody who's never, you know, done wool appliqué. I can teach them at a retreat, and by the time the retreat is over, they're like, you know, they got a new hobby and they're excited and they want, you know, they want to go to the shop and buy some new kits. And I believe that a lot of women go to retreats and they don't go to classes anymore because they think they've known all what they need to know. And when you get some women like that in a retreat and you start teaching them some things, they're like super inspired, and they're super excited to, you know, jump in because they're all of a sudden they thought they knew everything. And now, you know, they learn a few more tips and interesting things that are out there right now. And they get really excited, and there's nothing like being around a bunch of excited quilters.
I know. And they share with each other too, you know, not only there's always, I find that anytime I teach a class, somebody's, you know, has a little bit different way of doing something or different way to hold
sometimes
their head.
Sometimes even when you're the teacher, they teach you, right?
Right. Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
And it's okay with us. We want to learn too.
Right. I mean, some of the best things that I've learned, somebody showed me in class. You know, they're like, have you seen this or have you ever tried it this way? And it's like, that's, we do want to know that. We can't know everything right away.
No,
we
can't.
Learn it.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree.
So what kind of things will you have at your retreats? Like, just explain to me what it's like for somebody who's never been to a retreat hosted. You know, are they a couple of days? Do you take a class? Do you sew and stuff?
Yeah, they are a couple of days. And to me, they're very non-structured. If you want to be structured, then we do some, you know, make and takes. We do projects. Like when the retreat that I just did last December was, you come in, you're there for 3 nights, 4 days. We have great food. I plan a project for, like, maybe it's a Christmas ornament, or maybe it, you know, we teach that night. But if you want to sew on your, you know, the deadline that you have to get done for Christmas, by all means, you keep doing that. And then the next day we will, again, you know, do another project, start another project. We supply all the kits that's always included in my price for my retreat. And then we just, you know, sew all day, and we do lots of door prizes and lots of gifts. And I think one of the big things that I like to see is when people get something. I love to give people things. So when we have retreats, I make sure that everybody goes home with something. And when I do Trump shows and just do a lecture. I make sure everybody goes home with a pattern or a book or something like that. So I want them to remember me. And what's the easiest way to get somebody to remember me is to touch their heart. And even if it's as simple as giving them a pattern, mm-hmm. they will remember you. And, you know, that's what we all want to be. We all want to be remembered.
Yeah. And I think it would be, I've not taken a class with you. And I think that would be really fun because, I think everybody's style and their passion and excitement for what they're making it's just fun to see them explain that in a classroom. So like somebody who's maybe not, right. you know, like you were saying earlier, people who go, oh, I've taken a lot of classes. Well, take a new one. If it's been a while.
Right. Yes.
You know, right. sign
yep.
up.
Yep. And there's nothing wrong with continuing your education. We're never too old to learn something new. And you know, with today's world where things change faster than, you know, who knows? I mean, we just, right. there's always things to learn and creative people coming up with awesome, easier ways to do things.
Yeah. I always find too, is that when you take something once, I've taken like free motion quilting like 4 times over the, you know, 20 something years, because every time I'm in a different place, I have a different set of skills to bring to it. It's a different person teaching. And so I might not absorb something the first time, but you know, 5 years down the road,
right.
now
yes.
I can.
Yeah. I totally agree, because I think in a class, you can only, I think your brain is like on overdrive, and it can only absorb so much. And when you keep, you know, throwing new things at them, not all, I have several students who take my classes over and over again and are like, hey, I don't remember that. And I'm like,
right.
yeah, I taught you it. Yeah, you know, but, you know, and I think sometimes as quilters, you know, once we are experienced, we become very comfortable, and we just, you know, and sometimes I think that's good, because we don't worry about, like we were talking about earlier, whether our plaids are straight or not. We don't
right.
care. You know what I mean? And with experience, there becomes this familiarity that it's okay. And, you know, some of the best things I like about my antique quilts is finding, you know, 2 pieces together, sewn together to make the one patch that they needed
right.
to get that triangle button. So as a quilter, I think if people aren't so uptight and can just, you know, just let it go and just have fun and, you know, just, it's all about having fun. That's the main thing here.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have your schedule on your website for where people can find, your booth, your retreats, your classes, all of that.
Yes. We have, on my blog on the side, there's where I'm teaching. My teaching schedule is there. On the shop is our vending schedule, what shows we're going to be at up there. And we like to, you know, throw out some every reminders, you know, hey, we're going to be in Chicago next week, you know, come see us. So sign up for our blog post. It's just a little email we send you here and there and let you know what's new at the shop. Or I keep them separate. I have my own little personal blog that I've always had, and then the shop has a blog too. So it sometimes we cover the same thing, but I do a little bit more personal stuff on my blog.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much. I appreciate it. This has been so much fun.
It goes so fast, doesn't it?
I know. I'm going to see you in Paducah, hopefully.
Yes, I will be there. And thank you so much for asking me to be on again, Pat. I truly enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit allpeoplequilt.com. Visit me at patsloan.com. See you next time.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.